So, we want to keep this
This is what the glass of water is for.
We're kind of short on time, so. So, we're going to do this as a tag team, even though it's listed as me, Jim Harriet. We were actually did all this together, so we're going to do the talk together as a kind of tag team.
And this is something we often do. It's kind of a way to keep your mind sharp. One person prepares the slides without the other person knowing them, and the other person has to talk for them.
By the way, let me tell you a secret. If you're of the types who speak loudly, which you both are,
yeah. There
are microphones which will pick up.
Oh, so we don't have to do this necessarily.
Well, one of you can wear it, but you don't. It'll get to both. We'll get the whole thing.
Okay, put it on the table.
All right. So a couple of comments before really getting started, and that Markley said something about interdisciplinary, multidisciplinary, transdisciplinary, that reminds me of a story about one of these physicist, engineer, mathematician jokes. Physicist and engineer were confronted with the following proposition, which is, all odd numbers are prime. So the mathematician says, 3 is prime, 5 is prime, 7 is prime, the proof follows by induction. Physicist says, 3 is prime, 5 is prime, 7 is prime, 9 is not prime, 11 is prime, 13 is prime, 9 is experimental error, it's true. The engineer says, 3 is prime, 5 is prime, 7 is prime, 9 is prime, 11 is prime. So, even multidisciplinary solutions are not guaranteed. So, we're going to tell the Particon story here. We have a group called the Particle Economics Research Institute, which has a long and roundabout history, mainly because this has not been any of our full-time jobs. So, we've done other things like survive market crashes and get sued and start and bury a couple of companies and things like that. And in fact, Bill Janeway said something about Amazon's logistic infrastructure, requiring a bubble to fund it. Well, we were trying to fund a logistical infrastructure in our last company, DayJet, and it turns out that even if you have a whole fleet of jets, you cannot necessarily outfly a bubble. So some lessons are hard learned. So anyway, next slide. So I'm a theoretical physicist by training, and quantum gravity was one of Lenny Susskind's grad students, but found my way through an intellectual random walk to the Santa Fe Institute, was a postdoc at Stuart Kaufman's, and that's sort of the path into this complexity field. But early inspirations for a model like what we have constructed of the economy came from the Club of Rome. 15 is how old I was when I encountered this. I was a freshman in high school, and a friend of mine who was a freshman in college had access to some PDP, computer programmable by cards, and he told me about this thing called the Club of Rome and the Dynamo programming language. And so we thought, well, let's see if we can build our own dynamical system. And so we program in coefficients to differential equations. It was essentially kind of a Lotka-Volterra differential equation integrator, and we'd see what we got. And so we made some guesses, and everything either went to zero or infinity. And the learning cycle is very slow. It takes about a couple of days to get back your printout showing how things do this. And so you try some other coefficients, and it gave me the feeling that human life and civilization must be really fragile, dependent on very precise control of components. And I thought, I think it'd be better to study things. So I did. Anyway, fast forward to something more remote or more recent, which is early exposures to population biology applied to game theory in the iterated prisoner's dilemma. And Lee is one of the contributors to this, and Mats Lindgren and Mats Nordahl and Lindgren's first name is anymore, but Christian Lindgren did a model of the iterated prisoner's dilemma. And what was fascinating to me about this was that, unlike physical systems I was familiar with, it did not have a conserved number of elements in it. In other words, you started with a certain number of strategies that were playing against each other in pairwise prisoner dilemma matchings, but this number could grow and shrink. New ones could come in by genetic duplication and by mutation, and other ones could die out. And so you had this changing cast of characters. And I thought, you know, physics as I know it, it's not well suited to these kind of systems. You start with a box of hydrogen atoms. Well, they don't suddenly become neon, they stay hydrogen. And maybe some might leave and some enter, but you don't have a change of kind. You might have a change of number. And then I encountered later, about in the mid-90s, these what I call meta-systems of Watka-Volterra equations. It's kind of a return to the Club of Rome. A fellow named Sanjay Jain looked at these coupled systems of Watka-Volterra equations, and he had the same experience I did when I was 15, that you put together an arbitrary set of Watka-Volterra equations with a matrix of coefficients, you integrate them forward, and they go divergent directions. So he thought, I had this very slow learning process of about 3 days where I twiddled the coefficients. Well, he got this down to milliseconds, where when one particular equation crashes, he removes it from the matrix and replaces it with one mutation of one that has survived. And you end up with this changing mix. Again, this goes back to the iterated prisoner's dilemma and the changing mix. And what he found out was that this had very interesting behaviors in terms of extinction events, that things didn't leave kind of continuously. Well, they did leave continuously, but not uniformly. And in fact, there were power laws, avalanches of extinction events. And this was about the same time there was a lot of stuff of Bach and Wiesenfeld and others in self-organized criticality. And I thought, well, this is interesting. We're getting these kind of very general extinction events from a continuous system as well as discrete ones. And as I said, and then down there, self-organized critical systems of sand piles and forest fires and food webs. Ricard Soleil and others were studying very stylized spin-like models of food webs where links would appear and disappear and species might drop out of the system and new ones get introduced. And so at the time that all this was happening, I was working with Stuart Kaufman on the dynamics of NK networks, often called Kaufman Nets too. And mostly what we would do is we would build a particular instantiation of a Boolean net, so a bunch of nodes that had a certain number of inputs and they had a certain logic, and you ran the thing synchronously forward. There were a number of questions that came up, most of which went unpursued, which is, well, what if these networks were self-referential? What if their dynamics could then change the topology? They could abolish or create a link rather than just moving forward on the, what if they were evolutionary? And thought, because in biological systems, which is what we were studying, like that cancer response and such, genetic response, what if these were evolutionary and changed over time and you started building networks that did a certain purpose better and better? And so this sort of sets the stage for Particon. Next slide. There you go, could do that. Oops. Press it several times.
Oh.
Cool. Anyway.
That's pretty cool.
So first attempts, there were emergence of more sophisticated agent-based modeling techniques, really driven by the presence of more, cheaper, faster, powerful computation in languages. And so an early attempt that Jim and I cobbled together was called the Noom Economy, and was based on the Gödel's incompleteness proof, that he takes mathematical propositions and each one gets assigned an address, that based on the symbols in the proof, they are all associated with prime numbers, and that by raising them to various powers, you create some number, that every proof is has a what they would call in computer science, a UID, a unique identifier. And so we thought, could you make any, because you think of proofs, there are ways of doing things, and each one is unique. And so we thought, well, maybe the somewhat of a stretch to an economy is that a way of doing things is like an industrial process or a knowledge process. So what if we built a new economy based on starting sets of prime numbers and that you create new essential statements out of this? And for those who are familiar with Walter Fontana's alchemy work, it's based on lambda calculus and such, is somewhat similar to that. Also the work on autocatalytic sets of Morowitz that somebody mentioned yesterday, and Dolan and Kaufman and some other people too. And it didn't have very satisfactory behavior. It turned out to be kind of unstable and iffy, and we didn't have proper accounting in it, but it was compelling enough that we started telling other people about it, and that's when we started getting involved with Brownie and Zavanna.
Well, that actually came out of a conversation, a very late night conversation over Rome with Stu Kaufman at his house. He's very fond of Rome, so you knew this would be a good conversation. And the question kind of came up, as Stu likes to say, can you, he likes to talk about the, that the adjacent possible is not finitely pre-statable. So it's literally sort of out of the box, you might say. And so we got into sort of a drunken argument over whether or not you could build a computational model which could simulate or computationally have the emergence or the insertion of new entities which were not, in fact, finitely pre-statable. So could you actually have this entry of the novel modelable in using these computational models? And I said you could, he said you couldn't, and the challenge was on. So then I thought, well, maybe you could build these things out of construction. Maybe you can construct things, because we're talking about the laws, not the laws of physics per se, but the laws of construction. Maybe you can construct these out of prime numbers. Prime numbers become your ingredients, and then 7 times 3, they meet together, and you get 21, a new thing that has never existed before. So maybe that's a sort of way of a kind of proto-novelty, a way of beginning to model novelty, even though this is obviously quite pre-statable. Maybe that's a beginning into it. So that was the sort of gateway into this kind of this world of attempting to do what Brett thinks about every day, which is a speciation. Can you truly model speciation? So that's a kind of another sort of ancestral link in this thing.
Yes, next slide.
Well, this is a special slide for Silvana.
I ran into this quote recently of Hayes. on the power of metaphor and analogy, how deeply embedded it is in our lives. So deeply so you don't necessarily even know it's there. Practical men who believe themselves to be quite exempt from any intellectual influence are usually the slaves of some defunct economist.
Last sentence of the general theory.
Yes. And so we thought, well, Brian Arthur once told me that economists are those who didn't have the charm to be accountants. Let's go straight to the source and hang with accountants. I've never regretted it. And so in some sense, they're the particle physicists of economics. And in physics, they're the sort of pinnacle of prestige, or at least close to it, are particle physicists. They're the people who had the big budgets, the big experiments, the headlines, and that sort of thing for a long time. Well, if economics was the same as physics, accountants would be the people who were getting the Nobel Prizes and who were getting the attention and getting the huge accelerators built for them and that kind of thing, but it doesn't seem to be that way. I thought, you know, why should these fields be different? Because physics builds on reasoning from fundamental principles and building higher and higher levels of abstraction from them. And you can't necessarily go from all the way to the bottom to all the way to the top in one leap, but you can do it in a number of them. So we wanted to think about the atomic level interactions of economics. So the rules of the game, this is like the paraphrase of the second law of thermodynamics, you know, where you can't win, you can't break even, and you can't get out of the game. So this is Yogi Berra said, I call them as I see them. So something has to happen to call. If I don't see them, I make them up. Maybe mark to market might be a candidate for that. And if I don't call them, they ain't nothing. So this is very intense and quantum mechanical as well, because it deals with the observed and observability. So the dynamics of an economic system are emergent from a lot of atomic interactions. And this is not necessarily a practical macroeconomic description, but it might be a way of verifying higher level macroeconomic descriptions by reasoning for them from the bottom. So anyway, continue. So search for fundamentals. Many economic ideas aren't sufficiently atomic. As Lee said, too many sky hooks, and I don't know what the plural of deus ex machina.
Dei.
Pardon?
Dei.
Dei ex machina, or deus ex machinae. I don't know if it's one god and many machines, or many gods and one machine.
We'll work out the theology later.
Anyway,
we
don't want it. And we thought, why do so many of these agent-based models require the sky hooks and other ways of fooling with it? And we thought, maybe what's fundamentally at the root of this, what drives the system, is a very unusual kind of non-equilibrium, essentially the creation of new things. So there's inspiration from particle physics, that it might be simple symmetric laws that generate more complicated things. So the laws of accounting would be like those simple laws. So evolutionary economics, or what we've been calling evolutionary economics, Present theories are ecological in nature. In other words, they deal with a panoply of creatures that are trying to make a living, and they're, you know, predator, prey, all sorts of interrelationships are going on. But we don't want to think of an evolutionary, in other words, where the cast of characters was changing. This goes back to the iterated prisoner's dilemma and the iterated black hole terror systems. So how do creation and economic activity interact? At the root of everything is negotiation and creation, and everything should be able to come from that. And it's been observed that 80 to 90% of the wealth created in the 20th century came from new stuff, not stuff that existed before. And so if you have an ecological type theory, it doesn't really address that, not a proper theory of creativity, which entails some serious challenges. Next slide.
So the hunch, sort of give you sort of a little bit at the end of the lecture, the hunch is that it's the evolution itself, or the creation of new stuff, the introduction of novelty, which may actually be one of the key drivers in driving this thing far from equilibrium.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
How can you know that? That number is very surprisingly high to me, because you get an innovation, which is what you're calling the creation of new stuff. That innovation gets refined very, very quickly, and so that whole process is evolutionary. And I'm wondering how you can delineate what part of this is the innovation and what part of this is the fact that the innovation is refined before you ever hear about it. So that's all evolutionary dynamics that are refining, but typically you don't know about the invention until it's good enough to be worth something.
That's interesting. Well, selection, by the time you hear of it, selection still gets to operate.
Well, if I can jump in here, I think maybe one way you can define it, I don't know if this is how they do, but if it were, you're talking about is that once you invent something, you still need to optimize it. But what if instead you froze in 1900 all the technology that exists, right, and you just got to optimize the technology that already exists in 1900?
Right.
The claim is that you would have something like a tenth as much GDP growth in the last 10 years.
Or SKUs.
Keep in mind that how much of a simplification this quote-unquote thing we call the economy is compared to the biosphere. And, you know, the border here is a practical matter, stuff that gets measured in money. So a lot of stuff could be happening that it just happens to get economically defined as an innovation when it pops into the measurement system. One of the ways I think people get off the track is leaking outside the measurement system and getting off on other paths and distracted by things that are important, but they're not economically measured.
As the one that's getting a play this afternoon, could I suggest we hold this for the discussion?
Yeah. it's a really good question, though. So I appreciate
discuss
this,
it with them over lunch.
And I think it continues on, so let's do that.
So these classic fundamentals that show up in economic models were all things that we, you know, ambitiously and naively thought we'd like to dispense with. And not that we didn't believe they existed, but we wanted to see them emerge from more fundamental considerations, basically creation and negotiation. So things like utility functions. What are utils anyway? Supply and demand. Well, makes sense on a large statistical scale, but what on a small scale? Money, firms, resources, consumers. And we made some inroads on the majority of those, but not all of them. So mysteries of economics. You have horse buggy, blacksmith shop, buggy whip maker, so on, gives way to this whole other ecological clade of car, tires, gas station, driving movies, cops, bribes to cops. So there's sort of this Schumpeterian extinction pattern, how whole communities give way to whole other communities. And things may last a short time or a long time, but nothing really seems to last forever, very few things. So we might not be able to predict it. So this gets different from maybe what people who are trying to make money in the stock market, like the prediction company, are doing. We're not necessarily going to predict what comes next that gets to the finite and prestatable, but we might be able to characterize the statistics of the process, the meta process. And this could even happen in areas that are intellectual products. That's like Kuhn's structure of scientific revolutions, not necessarily economic products. So the hierarchy of structures. Accounting, as I said, is a particle physics. Microeconomics, we can deal with game theory, negotiation, and here's where agency usually enters. Macroeconomics, well, we all know about that. And evolutionary or macroeconomics is how new goods and services enter the system and old ones leave. It's this sort of Jared Diamond scale of looking at economics. Why do we have an industrial revolution? Why does it persist? Are there patterns in there that are meaningful? And will it persist? And if it ends, what might that end look like? So things on the kind of Oswald Spengler scale of century or millennia on economic systems. And like particle physics, this is probably only useful as an analogy, not as an actual computational tool. Like string theory, it deals with the very, very small, but its implications are for the entire cosmos. So the very smallest, the particle physics, are connected to the very largest. Next slide.
You're going to talk about the third quantization?
Oh, yeah. There's a third quantization, another
first two also.
Physics analogy.
Yeah.
That in quantum mechanics, you have the notion of a wave function. An electron has a probability of 1 integrated over all space. And to know about that wave function, you do experiments. And you eventually build up a picture of the wave function after you've done a number of experiments. Second quantization comes in quantum field theory, where the conservation principle is not a single electron, but a more abstract quantity of mass energy. So it's a four vector, and the interactions between the players in the system conserve this. So you can have an electron and a positron turned into a photon. And so you didn't, the numbers and types of things were not conserved. You have interactions that might change those things. You could have large numbers of photons created, and it doesn't matter if you started with 3 at the beginning of your process and ended up with 17. Other things are being conserved, so it's still a kosher process. But what stays conserved is the alphabet. So if you have quarks and gluons, they can have all sorts of interactions, but at the end of the day, you're still dealing with quarks and gluons if you're talking about quantum chromodynamics. What physics hasn't dealt with as of yet is where the interactions actually change the players. You know, you start with geese and frogs and end up with buffalo. And this is the kind of thing that, the kind of mathematics that's going to address.
Is this happening?
Yeah, we haven't simulated it yet.
Don't worry. It's covered.
It's cool. It's called sport.
Yeah, so according to Yogi Berra's second rule, it does happen.
So, if this.
Sometimes we get buffalo and sometimes we'll get politicians.
So, the third quantization is a kind of mathematics that isn't there to be borrowed from physics necessarily. It has to come from other places, and no, biology is a good place to look, and probably other places that haven't even looked yet. Next.
Maybe language theory, but you're all grammars. You have an
alphabet. Yes, grammar theory, language.
You get words that are more and more complex, and you can somehow.
And that's what we got. The original Lumi economy and the autocatalytic sets and the lambda calculus that are all inspired by language.
Right. So maybe there isn't anything new, but it's so deep in the combinatorics that it might as well be new.
So let's see. Well, this is a Jim slide, but I'll find it. So four epistemological whammies. Physics-like, well, measurement event is fundamental. If you don't call it, it doesn't exist. So the measurement event is what? You sell or buy something. Nothing exists until you do that.
Your house is not worth anything until the waveforms collapse and you sell it.
Despite what assessors might say. And even when measurement happens, uncertainty persists. This is like the electron wave function, because it's still just one measurement, and the act of measurement can affect the dynamics of the system. There's no price elasticity. When you enter a market, your process of interacting with it changes its price. How it's biology like is that there's speciation, the inspiration for particon, and that incommensurate measure, which is something that's important, is that we are building a system so primitive. Brownie and Zovano wrote a book called Quantum Economics that deals with economics 50,000 years ago, which is people, cavemen, trading with each other and trying to keep track of what they're doing. So they're trading clubs and bearskins and keeping track of what they're doing on notched sticks. So very, very primitive economics built on negotiation and trading. Well, different people have different sticks, or maybe one person's keeping track in shells. And so you have this accounting system where people are trading and they're keeping track of it, but they don't necessarily have accounting systems that match. And so how do you get from that to money is one of the main challenges. We want to grow that, not assume it.
But the challenge is, of course, the big point of this slide is kind of an ad for economics. It basically says if you thought physics was hard, well, this is even harder. But the incommensurate measure part is that literally that I measure my own progress, but I can't. There's no. It's more or less analogous to there's no simultaneity at a distance in physics. There's no simultaneous, as it were, or value also. It's your full, you're fundamentally isolated from your neighbors about what you were worth, how well you were doing. Except, and we'll see, except if the barter arrangements end up in an emergent currency, then you are, if you are measuring yourself in the same currency as someone else, then you can begin to bridge that gap. Those are the kinds of issues we wanted to build into the model, that there is, that ultimately the goal of the critter or the agent ends up in not creating so much wealth or something, but literally just keeping on keeping on. So we wanted to sort of push it deep down into the metabolism of the agents as the, as what why they're here, what they're here to do.
Just next one.
2 minutes more.
All right.
Because we haven't got some model yet, so we've got to
roll. Oh, okay.
We
built first of several attempts at an evolutionary model, which has been realized two or three times in different languages. And nodes could do buy, sell, haggle, double entry accounting, which gets very interesting when people are keeping track in different measurement systems. Local currency, plus the ability to make meta decisions, like what currency am I going to do my accounting in? Inventory plus currency, so there's things plus currency, we're not calling it money. And random injection of new processes into systems. So there are new ways of doing things that get injected into the system. That doesn't mean that they're part of the economy necessarily. They get considered, and if they are able to, it's a popularity contest. If they are useful, they find their way. It's a question that Jim had with Stu. How does a wall know it's a wall? Well, it's because somebody wants it and uses it as a wall and will pay for it.
Right, nobody wants to have a wall, but they do want these. There's certain things people want, certain things people just don't want. And how is this process of what we call emergent identity? How does that happen? And we think it's more or less analogous to value. I only know what my house is worth because somebody's willing to pay for it. I don't know what a carburetor is worth because the guy building engines wants it, but he only knows what engines are worth because the guy building cars wants it in this sort of would-be infinite regress, except it goes in loops. And so we also suspect, or I guess we're more or less postulating that there's also a process of what we might call emergent identity. You only know what something even is because somebody else wants it. Things have to things have to win beauty contests to survive at all. And so we're trying to build a model that has that character to it.
And this is a question that comes up not so much in economics or physics, but more in language and computer science, emergent ontology.
Yeah, it's essentially emergent ontology, which is analogous to computer science languages, in the sense they used to have languages where you have a set number of types, a fixed alphabet, and now we have so-called dynamic typing in the form of object-oriented programming. So that theme you see in lots of places.
So in the self-constructed, well, we've covered a lot of this, the emergent value, emergent measure, people are doing their own accounting, emergent identity, we talked about, so how something survives, can it be made, can it be sold? And the answer is, depends.
When you are talking about beauty contest, are you talking about it just playing regular, or are you talking about it in the Keynesian sense of the winner of the beauty contest is the person who guesses best what the guesses of the people who are judging the beauty contest are doing?
Or participating in it.
Right. So offhand, I would say not the Keynesian sense.
It's just a plain beauty contest.
Yeah, or a popularity contest.
The reason I hadn't hesitated is because the model currently only has the notion of buying and selling things. And we're in the process of thinking, hopefully deep thoughts, about how to also buy and sell companies or parts of companies. So we might get that second order effect then. But I don't think
which is what Keynes in chapter 12 said is the essence of the stock market.
Yeah. So this might be
second tier
average opinion.
Can I make a suggestion? Because we really at a quarter to 12 we have, in 15 more minutes we have to go in and have lunch and so forth. You guys have done years of work on a model, and I'd like to.
How about that?
Keep going.
So let's
vote.
Go.
Push the button.
Oh, well, actually, the model comes after these questions. So
these are things that we have wanted to look at, the emergence of money, which we've had success at, lifetime distribution of entities, wealth distribution of entities, power laws have been found. Unit of selection problem is something that we haven't solved, which is what acts on its own behalf? Does each production node act on its own behalf, or can you have assemblages of these? Can you create firms? And realize that doing that involves questions of institutions and regulation, which we have begged off of for now. Creation extinction cascades, which we've also seen, limiting cases, which we have not built things statistically significant enough to see yet. Relation to physics, not there yet. Introduction of higher level entities like banks and stock market, not there yet. And relation to ecology and environment. So if we could relate this to energetics and thermodynamics, we might be able to think about limits to growth, complexity, and sustainability.
Which is the segue into the a little bit of talk about the model itself. So the model is really a work in process, the test jig. It's more or less sort of along the lines we talked about before about test beds and so on, places for actually running experiments, looking to answer a number of these questions, or at least investigate a number of these questions. So the basic anatomy of the thing is it's made out of agents, not surprisingly. They're connected to each other, either by buy-sell relationships. My agent takes eggs and makes omelets, and I got to find other people who want to actually buy omelets, but also connected to any other agents for barter arrangements, because I might get beads for those omelets, and then I have to figure out what to do with my beads, because I really want eggs. Or maybe I get chickens and sort of chicken feed or something. So there is a notion of competition among agents, so you can have many-to-one relationships, many-to-many relationships. There is the notion of creation and extinction events. We can either do it manually or automatically. So the idea of new cells coming into being or cells losing out because they lose too much money, they run out of cash, and so on. There is a notion of units. It's a unitary system. There's no sense. There's a discrete unitary system. So units are things, cruise through the system like eggs and omelets. And we pay with things. And the things may turn into currency only in the sense that everybody share in an emergent sense, people begin, or communities of agents start sharing the same things in order to simplify the path from selling something to buying something. So the actual kind of dynamics or fundamental change in the system is metabolism. So at the very bottom of every agent, we simplify, even though you might think it takes eggs plus cheese to make an omelet. We, for the purposes of this simple model, we simplify that eggs turn into omelets, and maybe something else for cheese, and we may be able to sort of compound these agents to make a more more plausible type of agents, or even compounding agents, because there's multiple processes in a real company and so on. But the fundamental unit is transformation. Eggs turn into omelets, as it were. A's turn into B's in this case. And the fundamental activity—that's the fundamental activity inside an agent, other than accounting. And the fundamental activity outside an agent is they trade things according to some ratio. So I might give you four bananas for three oranges, something like that. We do accounting. One of the novel things about this, at the behest of our accounting standards person here, Zovana, we actually and Mike, we every agent does full double entry bookkeeping. So it's plausible in that sense, and it's disciplined. All the agents are disciplined, you might say. Debits and credits. And finally, we have a fair amount of instrumentation in the thing. We have instrumentation form. It's animated, you'll see. We have spreadsheet like text. You can look at all the numbers cruising through, feed them off to some other thing like Mathematica. And we have graphs and so on, so you can watch the bars go up and down and so on. So with that, let me switch over to some real code. This particular model is written in C sharp. The earlier versions are written in Java. I don't know if we'll go back to Java or not. But we have this notion. Let me start out something really simple. We have a notion of an agent.
they don't fill up and they don't become depauperate and they're not connected to the outside world. Is that because there's an assumption of negative feedback that keeps profit from accumulating, or?
Well, there is profit. I can show that.
In prior versions, the nodes would get bigger or smaller.
Yeah, I can do that.
Now you have to stop it.
No. It's just like the real world. Now you got to read the damn financials.
Yeah.
This will just show you whether they were bigger or smaller.
Right, you had a good quarter of a millisecond.
Oh, you can do that now in this one?
Yeah.
Okay.
I suspect you've done this, but have you analyzed the evolution of these things in terms of network structures and small worlds and bunch and lots kind of stuff?
That's on the list.
That's
we have
on
not,
the list.
Not done that. And,
well, the idea of characterizing these emergent loops, the distribution of those, the size and complexity and interconnectivity of those is a measure.
By the way, Jim's financial results here are unaudited. The debits may not equal the credits, in other words. And also,
I'm sure you've...
your results may vary.
You've looked at the literature on the network visualization, because when we visualized network formation for the trade network game that a group of us did, we were looking, there's a vast literature on how to, you know, like spring technology, it's actually physics technology on springs, how to you know, visualize a little more about how, who's coming together and bring them together. I mean, actually literally have your network emerging, not just with static placed agents, but with having the agents sort of getting closer together or more relaxed strings if they're not interacting as much, or you can visualize stochastic interactions versus continual.
Mm-hmm, yep.
So we've got that kind of technology in the trade network game. And just interesting to me that this is great. But
these will start. Yeah, these guys. I have algorithms that sort of become trading communities.
You can actually show the network sort of evolving into patterns and visualize it.
So yeah, the nodes will get bigger or smaller based on profit, equity, whatever you want them to do. You can actually watch them. They do accumulate wealth. They do the purpose of accumulating wealth, presumably, so they last longer. Things like that. They will go out of existence. New ones will come in when they see opportunities and so on. So. So too much to show in a short demo, but that's the basic idea. And as I say, it's kind of tested a lot of experiments with other people.
Could you like just summarize what have you learned? I mean, what new results do you have? Because I'm not clear yet.
I would say that the emergence of money is something that demonstrated in a plausible, convincing way.
And how did that happen?
So it happens by agents that are trading and doing their own accounting. And then they evaluate, if they're trading with people who are using other accounting systems, they can actually try it in their trading partner systems and see if that gives a more reliable, lower variance result. Better accounting, basically. That's the fitness.
And actually, it's emergence of money in a power law distribution for both measuring and for transacting. And it turns out they're common currencies that what emerges is a common currency for both.
I can give it brief, and then we can break up. I can say how I really think it happens.
Can I make a suggestion? Because we have some pressure on us to have lunch. We also have a surprise. So I'd like to suggest, when we come back from lunch, we're going to talk about breaking up into groups, and I suggest that at least one of those groups be looking at more details of this model.
We have to say Sam's model.
So let's thank Jim. We have a group on this. We have a surprise in the bistro.